Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the IT Doctors, offering information technology project management and project management training at Strictly eBusiness, booth 709.
Good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Today we're broadcasting live from the Minnesota State Capitol on this last day of the regular 2001 Minnesota legislative session. Emphasis is on the word regular because there will be a special legislative session to finish the work that won't get done today. Legislators have been meeting since early January for 139 days now, but as we gather on this last day of the session, virtually all of the major business facing legislators is still not finished, and there's little or no chance that very much of it will be completed today. Today we're going to be talking with a number of key legislators. We'll be talking with the governor, all in an effort to get their reading on what happened and what's likely to happen and how some of the big issues we've been hearing about these last 4.5 months will eventually get resolved. So thanks for joining us, and do stay tuned all the way to 1 o'clock for this live programming. Riding shotgun today is Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, Mike Mulcahy. Morning, Mike.
Morning, Gary. Always glad to be your sidekick.
Usually pretty wild and woolly this last day. This is a little more tranquil.
Well, definitely a little bit of the pressure is off here. I think these folks have known for the past couple of days that they couldn't get it all done by midnight tonight. And so they are looking forward to a special session, which the governor has said over the weekend he will call. And that's what happens next, although I still expect they might work late tonight to try to get done whatever they need to get done before they start working on some of the big budget bills before that special session begins.
Now, we should note that special sessions are not all that special, really.
Well, I did a little count this morning and found about 40 since 1857. 40 mm-hmm. special sessions in 144 years. It's not fair to say, though, that there's only one every few years, because sometimes there are more than one special session in a year. The last time that happened, 1997, there were three special sessions that year.
Mm-hmm. And do we have any idea yet from the governor's office as to when this special session will occur?
No. And he wants some kind of agreement on taxes before he calls one, and that's what these folks have to figure out here this morning.
Well, joining us here at our broadcast location is the Speaker of the Minnesota House, one of the key folks in trying to get all of the issues resolved, House Speaker Steve Swiggum. Morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Just fine. Now, you were meeting with Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe a little earlier this morning. Is the path clear now?
I wish it was. Gary, we met with the good senator. We're trying to work out, you know, some type of arrangements where maybe we can find targets on a couple of areas, you know, a couple of the spending areas. But the fact of the matter is, as Mike mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, that you know, we're really looking to see what the tax bill looks like, what the property tax reduction piece looks like, and all the you know, the spending issues, especially the equalization issues in education, depend upon the tax bill.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know how the size of the tax bill, do you not?
Well,
more or less
at this time, you know, we've agreed to a number there. Now, that may or may not be the final number, obviously. You know, things are fluid, but we've agreed to a number, and we have our tax chairs talking about how they can come together, both the philosophical differences as well as, you know, the numbers to make it work.
Mm-hmm. How did it come to this, Mr. Speaker? The governor says that the legislature is just unable to get its work done in 5 months.
Well, there's differences, Mike. That does not mean we haven't been working. You know, as you know, we've been here hours and hours and hours, and you know, when you log 16, 18 hours a day, you know, I think you feel you've been putting forth an effort and working. There's honest differences. You know, it's much easier for the governor to be unilateral decision maker. You know, he provides his budget. He doesn't have to go to the citizens of the state. We have public hearings on bills. We listen to citizens. We listen through the months of February, March, April, which is the legislative process. We ought to do that. And then we have to come to an agreement amongst 201 persons. You know, it's not just like, you know, you're the unilateral decision maker. You have to balance within your caucus. Then you have to balance within the other caucus and then within the other body. So there's a give and take. And You know, suffice to say, anybody who's ever been part of a group or a family knows if they're going to make the, if they get to make the only decision, it can be made pretty quickly and right now. When you start thinking of your other family members or the other members of your group or the other members of your church or school, whatever it may be, it becomes a little harder.
Is it more difficult with a tripartisan government, with having a governor of the Independence Party, House controlled by Republicans, Senate controlled by Democrats? Does that make it much more difficult than it used to be?
I think it makes the process, Gary, a little bit more difficult. I think the product at the end, the product by which we will be judged, in the past, you know, has come forward with a pretty good product. But when we look back to the last 3 years, you know, the balance is good from the product standpoint. But in 1999, the first year, we basically got the governor to, at the end, join the House on the, you know, the across the board income tax cuts that broke the logjam. In the year 2000, we kind of, you know, came across this gimmick, this third gimmick, because we were at a stalemate at that point too, as you remember. And that got us out of the situation in 2000. Maybe some similar type of gimmick is necessary right now. But, you know, in all honesty, we are moving towards progress of an agreement. You know, I'm pretty optimistic. I'm pretty positive. Will we make midnight tonight? No, we're not going to do that. But are we going to end up with a product that I think speaks to the citizens of the state, their needs, their priorities? Gary, I think the answer will be yes.
You took some heat last time from some of the conservatives in the party and some of the contributors to the caucus who said that you gave in too easy, didn't get a big enough income tax cut. Was that in your mind this time? And were you determined not to agree to something that wasn't what you wanted?
Let's be fair. I took some heat from some conservatives, some moderates, and some liberals. I took heat from everybody. That's at least it seems that way, which probably speaks to the fact that what we decided at the end was probably pretty good. I mean, if you're taking heat from everybody on all sides, it probably means you have a pretty good package. It's balanced fairly well. Yeah, Mike, there were some conservative individuals in the state who felt that we compromised too easy, cooperated too much, gave in, whatever word you want to use. I did not happen to agree with them. Our caucus didn't happen to agree with them. They have their right to say that, and I think it's certainly... that situation bears upon your decision making. I don't think that's a determining factor. You know, I understand that no matter what decision we end up with at the end, Mike, I'm going to take heat from somebody.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to review again, Mr. Speaker, who at this point is trying to work out that tax agreement that you say is critical to the whole kind of the centerpiece of this whole thing?
Well, in the Senate would be Senator Ann Rest and Senator Larry Kogemiller. In the House, Dan McElroy and Representative Dan McElroy from Burnsville, Representative Ron Abrams are talking about options to bring forward, Gary, to bring this tax discussion past the philosophical differences, which there are. I mean, there's big philosophical differences, but you have to bring it to a reality, to a decision. They're talking about those options, doing computer runs, and we're listening to them. I think that they're moving closer and closer together. The reports I had after their all-day meetings yesterday, Saturday, was that they're moving much, much closer together. But, you know, we're not going to make a decision on the spending items until we see the tax bill. That's plain. And by the way, the governor has said that now, too. I've tried to get the governor to say that since the 1st of January. I've pitched this issue to him probably four or five different times personally that we should pass the tax bill first and then not pass any spending bills until we pass the tax bill. In the same way that you do in your family. In your family, in your business, you decide, you see how much resources you have available, and then you start allocating them. Then you allocate whether you can go on a family trip, or you can afford to buy a car, or you can afford to go to the Dairy Queen, whatever it may be. Government shouldn't be any different than that, and that's the process. Now, the governor finally, as of Saturday evening, said that process is okay, but I just don't want to let him be the final only judge as to whether the tax bill is good or not.
Now, he also urged legislators, though, to continue work and pick up the pace on finishing up work on these other bills in the meanwhile. Can you do much of that today? Do you expect any bills to actually pass by midnight tonight, any of the major bills?
Major bill. Gary, right now, as you and I are sitting here, the majority leader of the House, I left alone with the majority leader of the Senate. I better get back there real quickly. Gary, no, Tim is a very, very wonderful negotiator. Gary, I think we would like to have targets in at least a couple of areas soon, and then be able to move forward with even the potential of passing those two bills yet later tonight. That's an ideal situation. Now, I think that shows good faith to the governor to quote, get some resolution, to get some work done, to get some agreement, to be able to shake hands. You know, that's an important thing to be able to do. And I think it's good faith to the governor from his, you know, emphasis to us.
Mr. Speaker, thanks for joining us.
Gary, thank you for having me. Mike,
thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Minnesota House Speaker Steve Swigum joining us here at our broadcast location. If you're, excuse me, if you're just joining us, Midday is coming to you live today from the Minnesota State Capitol on this last day of the regular session of the 2000 legislature. There will be a special session. We don't know yet just when that will occur, and we don't know how much work the special session will have to get accomplished, because that depends on how much gets done today. Joining us now is one of the gentlemen at the center of the hurricane, State Senator Larry Pogemiller from Minneapolis, who is the chair of the Senate Tax Committee. And as you heard Mr. Speaker Swigum say, this tax negotiation is seen as really key to all the other bills that have to be passed. Senator Pogemiller, have you come to an agreement? Can you announce victory here?
Well, it's not a question of victory, Gary. It's a question of trying to come up with a reform package that works for the governor, for the House and the Senate. And I actually think the tax bill is not the hang-up. I think the hang-up is the level of education spending for K-12 and the University of Minnesota. I'm hearing members very distressed that the level of investment is not high enough under the proposed compromises. And I think if there was more investment in K-12 and University of Minnesota, I think that tax bill would fall together very quickly.
What is the what's the basic difference between Senate Democrats and House Republicans on the property tax issue? Is it who gets the relief? Is that kind of the long and the short of it?
I think there's two differences. The first difference is that the House Republicans want to do more tax relief than we want to do, because we think we should invest in K-12 education in the University of Minnesota. That simple. And I think there's a growing fear that we're going to lose President Udoff if we don't invest appropriately. And I think there's fear that we're going to have significant teacher layoffs and class size increases. So that's the first piece. With regards to the tax relief package and tax reform package, there's agreement that we'll have a general ed buyout. There's agreement that we will provide rate compression, and I think for both apartments and commercial industrial. But the Senate will not support the House position of shifting commercial industrial and apartment taxes onto homeowners. We're not going to support that. And you have to pay for the relief for commercial industrial and apartments. You can't just shift it onto homeowners.
How hard is this to negotiate these issues? They sound like pretty big sticking points.
Well, they're big philosophical differences, but I think they can be negotiated out, and I don't see a problem on the tax side. I think the problem is that the House Republicans refuse to invest in education in the University of Minnesota at a level that's necessary at this time in the state's history.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the rebate, is that a done deal, basically, the rebate that people are looking for this summer?
I think so. I think the Senate is willing to do the entire rebate as long as we appropriately invest in K-12 education and the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. If we do that, I think there'll be a full rebate as requested by the governor.
One last question for you, Senator. Assuming that when all is said and done, you pass a bill that significantly reduces property taxes.
In the 20% range.
How do you make sure that those property taxes remain reduced? Historically, as they've been cut, well, they always go back up.
Well, that is the key element. If you overdo the commercial industrial compression and the apartment compression, property taxes will go up on homes. There'll be a 1 or 2 year reduction of 20 to 25%. And then in the out years, there will be incredible shifts to homeowners. And that is the major sticking point in the tax bill right now. And I don't believe we're going to support that in the Senate. And I believe the House will back off that position as they better understand the impacts of their bills in the out years.
Any guesstimate as to when you might be able to reach an agreement on the tax bill?
Again, my belief, and I know I'm kind of out of step here with the leadership, I believe that if there was more quality investment in K-12 education and the University of Minnesota, I believe that there would be a very quick agreement on taxes.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much.
DFL State Senator Larry Pogemiller from Minneapolis, who is chair of the Senate Tax Committee. The Tax Committee is trying to work out an agreement on just what kind of a tax break Minnesotans will be receiving out of the 2001 legislative session, be it the regular or special. State Senator Dean Johnson joins us now from Willmar, and Senator Johnson is the chair of the Senate's Transportation Committee. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Nice to see all you folks all dressed up for the radio show. We always like to look good on radio.
Well, absolutely. What's the status of the transportation bill? This, of course, would be the bill that pays for highway construction, transit across the state of Minnesota. Are you folks close to some kind of an agreement?
Oh, I think we could wrap up our work with one good day, perhaps two short days. We do have a number, a tentative number, which we can work with. But it's been further complicated because of simply the way we're organized this year. 3 days ago, not only transportation, transit, public safety, including the state patrol, but we've been given authorization for funding of all the courts and all the criminal justice issues. And so we spent a good deal of time late Saturday and Saturday evening going through those because many of our committee members in the conference committee did not have a background in criminal justice. But we had a good 101, as we say, and have made some decisions in that regard. Linking to the tax bill, of course, Senate Democrats felt all along that we ought to use half the rebate for just that, rebates, and the other half for public education and for transportation. And it's a bit disappointing to know that in our bill that we will simply take $300 million off the bottom line and hand it over to Senator Pogemiller in a tax committee, and that money was designated for betterment of roads and the transit, the transportation system in this state. But we will not despair, because under the current system, in this coming biennium, from the gas tax and other revenues, $3.3 billion is available for road construction and maintenance around the state, coupled with the $500 million from the surplus last year. It's the good news, bad news. The good news is we'll have unprecedented number of resources for Minnesota's highways and repair and road construction. The bad news is already started. Those orange cones that we see up, because there's going to be so much dirt moved and bridge reconstruction over the next 2 to 3 years, and we still have a gap as to the needs, especially in the metropolitan area, as we look at 494 and Highway 100, which are multi-million dollar projects. So we do what we have to do, and it's important that we finish this session in a timely manner. Now, we're not going to do that by way of the Constitution this evening, but hopefully that the leadership with the governor will find some way of a balance between tax relief and the investment side, plus the rebates. I described it early this morning to a constituent back in Willmar at 6:30. I said, we have over about $2.3 billion. If you think of it this way, a third of it will be mailed back in the rebates in August. A third of it is going for property tax. And that's what Senator Pogemiller is talking about. It's who's going to get the property tax relief. The other third is going to be in investments in our nursing homes and our schools, colleges, and universities. I don't mean to suggest that we're going to have that one-third, one-third, one-third that we had last session, because that's not the deal. It's a different kind of a way, but it's a way of kind of looking at the global picture of our finances. The governor has said, unless we add another $30 million in our bill to the transit, which is the Senate position, our bill is in trouble with his red pen. And we have essentially agreed to that on the Senate side, but we also told him that we need $5 million in public safety in our bill for Granite Falls for the tornado relief package that struck Granite Falls in July of 2000. And since they've had two plant closings and a flood, Now, the other issue that we dealt with this morning is we made a formal motion on the Senate floor as a chief author of the stadium bill to simply lay it on the table. It's a nice place to park it for now. And that's a way of saying we're not going to take it up. We need to have the tax bill passed and signed. We need to have the budget bills passed and signed. And then at some point in the future, we will take up the ballpark. I'm not suggesting it could be a special session issue, nor am I dismissing it. But I do think at the very least it'll be an issue in 2002. Give legislators, after I made the motion, many of my colleagues came by and said, thanks for that. It gives us a little time to go home, talk to the local Lions Club, the Rotary Club, visit with our constituents, explain the contents of the bill. They're not angered by it. It's not that 1997 feeling. They just, I would say today, had we taken up on the floor and the tax bill and the budget bills had been done, this ballpark bill would have passed the state Senate bill today.
Mm-hmm. Senator, before we break here for news headlines, let's just go back to the transportation bill for a minute and run down a few items that are either in there now or aren't in there now. Constitutional amendment that would move the about half of the sales tax that's collected on vehicles, move that over to the highway fund. Is that going to be part of a final bill?
The Senate position is 50% motor vehicle excise dedication upon the passage by the voters. 32% of that would be to backfill the loss of revenue from the license tab reduction of last year, and 18% dedicated for transit. The House provision is 60% all dedicated for roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. So we have to resolve that issue.
And then, let's see, PhotoCop. This is the one that will allow local communities to set up cameras at intersections and nab people who run red lights, send them a ticket. Is that going to survive?
That is in the Senate bill, not in the House bill. But upon doing some research, we understand now that the law provides that municipalities may, in fact, have PhotoCop already. So I think the chances of that are not too good this session. The House is very much adamantly opposed to it, but we'll give it its due process and we'll take a look at it. We did on Saturday add two things to the conference committee report, the HOV lane study on 394, as well as, I believe, 35W, and asking the federal government to tell us, does that work or not work? And that is currently in the conference committee report, as well as a $1 deputy registrar fee when we process for our license tabs. They've not had an increase for like 15 years, and we felt $1 for the processing was okay.
Crosstown highway construction delay for a year, that's going to make it into the final bill?
I came to the session with all black and brown hair. I'm getting gray hair over that issue. It's one of every session has an issue that kind of sneaks up on you. Little did I know this was going to be such a problem. MnDOT, of course, has said they're going to spend $135 million for the reconstruction of the crosstown. And we ought to learn something from this. The crosstown and 35W is built by politicians. We shouldn't build roads and bridges. We should leave it to the engineers. And what MnDOT is proposing to do is essentially put two separate roadways. In other words, 62 will either go under or over 35. But the problem is, I'm not sure it'll be any more capacity when all's said and done. We need to take a look at it and discuss it and figure out something in the conference committee report. I can't begin to tell you, Gary, where that one ends up.
And not to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like from what you've said today, Senator, the big sticking point in your committee would probably be the transit funds.
Yes, it is. The Senate and the governor are $30 million more than the House provisions. The Metropolitan Council, the Metropolitan Transit have told us if the House budget stays, they will be reducing buses, bus services, laying off people at a time when we're trying to encourage more people to ride the bus in the metropolitan area, and to cut back service simply is counterproductive. So we believe that we need to put that $30 million into the budget. The governor has said put it in or it's got the red pen.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much.
State Senator Gene Johnson, a DFLer from Wilmer, joining us. He is the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, another one of the committees trying to work out the broad agreements that are needed to keep the state running for another 2 years.
Well, along with Mike Mulcahy, I'm Gary Eichen. We're broadcasting live today from the Minnesota State Capitol, this being the last day of the regular session of the 2000 legislature. There will be a special session because a lot of work is not going to get done yet today. We will continue our conversation with key legislators later on the program. We'll be talking with Governor Ventura as well, but let's take a little break here.
I'm Madeline Brand. The FBI is under increasing scrutiny after its latest blunder. The agency failed to hand over important documents in the Oklahoma City bombing case, which ultimately delayed Timothy McVeigh's execution.
We got to know what went wrong, why it went wrong, and what we need to do to fix it.
The FBI under the microscope. Join Juan Williams on the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's at 1 o'clock this afternoon here on Minnesota Public Radio. You're listening to member-supported Minnesota Public Radio. We'd like to say thanks to our loyal and generous members. And we'd like to introduce Greta Cunningham, who joins us now with some headlines. Greta.
Thanks, Gary, and good morning. A commission led by former U.S. Senator George Mitchell is calling on Israel to stop building Jewish settlements. The call is included in a report that urges both Israel and the Palestinians to end the violence. The commission is recommending a series of steps to be taken by both sides and said a cooling-off period should begin at once. Mitchell says the restoration of trust is essential and the process must begin immediately. Israel has rejected the suspension of settlements in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Secretary of State Colin Powell says the United States will work with both sides to stop the violence. The U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling today in a free speech case that has implications for the news media. The justices say a radio host cannot be sued for airing an illegally taped telephone conversation. In a 6-3 vote, the court said the First Amendment trumps wiretap laws in the case of the host who played a recording made by someone else. Justice Paul Stevens, writing for the majority, stated, quote, a stranger's illegal conduct does not suffice to remove the First Amendment shield from speech about a matter of public concern. President Bush says he's just a proud Yale dad. Bush is giving an honorary getting an honorary degree from his alma mater and giving a commencement speech today. Bush's daughter Barbara is a Yale freshman. More than 150 professors have signed a protest petition saying it's a premature honor for a president who's been in office only 4 months. In regional news, today is the last official day of the Minnesota legislature's 2001 session, and not a single spending package has been passed. House and Senate meet this morning to discuss whether it's possible to pass a couple of bills of their respective floors in time to meet the midnight deadline. Governor Ventura has said he'll call a special session to allow them to get their work done. The forecast for Minnesota has a wind advisory for the western portion of the state today. It'll be partly to mostly cloudy and cool statewide with some scattered showers possible. Highs today mainly in the 50s. Right now in Duluth, it's overcast and 47. Rochester reports overcast skies and 53. It's cloudy in Thief River Falls and 46. And in the Twin Cities, partly cloudy skies with a temperature of 52 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
All right. Thank you, Greta. It's about 26 minutes now before noon. This is midday, coming to you live today from the Rotunda, the Minnesota State Capitol. This is the last day of the 2001 legislative session, the regular session, that is, as Greta noted. There will be a special session call to finish up the work that has not been completed during this regular session. Today we're talking with several key legislators to get an update on just where some of these key issues stand. And joining us now at our broadcast table is State Representative Ken Wolf from Burnsville, who has been instrumental in trying to put together a new energy bill for the state of Minnesota. Representative Wolf, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
My understanding is that you folks are pretty close to wrapping up your work. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes. We just signed the conference committee report a few minutes ago. It will be taken up in the Senate and should pass out of there, sent over to the House. And assuming we stay in session long enough here, we'll get this done before we go into special session.
Now, my understanding is the bill is designed primarily to streamline processes, make it a little easier to get some power plants built, transmission lines, and so on, and encourage conservation. The sticking point seemed to be the whether or not you folks were going to require utilities in Minnesota to use renewable energy sources. How did that play out finally?
We worked that was the sticking point. What we ended up with in agreement with the Senate is there is no mandate on a renewable portfolio. However, there's some very strong objectives in the bill. The utilities are required to report back to the Public Utilities Commission on how well they are doing toward obtaining those goals, and the Utility Commission is to prepare a report to the legislature telling us how they're doing, and if they aren't keeping on track of the goals, then we will suggest legislation at that point in time. So we're trying to encourage them first, with sort of a stick there in the background that will come back later if they aren't meeting their objectives.
So basically the House position prevailed there.
That's correct.
And why didn't the House think it was important to put in a mandate this year?
Well, it was partly the principle of the thing. We felt very strongly that this was not a deregulation bill, and those extra protections and mandates may be appropriate when we get to full deregulation to prevent people from saying, well, we'll take the easy route and the cheap route so we can sell cheaper electricity. But under the current regulatory system, we didn't feel those were necessary, but we do want them to move that way. And so strong objectives with follow-up if they don't meet them.
Lots of warnings that we might run out of power sometime during this decade. Is this bill that you folks have approved now, is that going to make sure that the lights stay on in Minnesota?
I'm reasonably sure that it'll do that. The important thing was that we now have lead time with the streamlining of the processes, et cetera. If we need some tweaking on this bill, we have a good base, and we can come back and tweak it over the next couple of years. If we hadn't passed a major bill this year, next year we wouldn't have been an election year for 201 of us. We would have been pushed out 2 or 3 years, and then we could have been in serious trouble.
And finally, Representative Wolf, can we expect a big fight next year over whether to allow Prairie Island to store some more radioactive waste at its site?
Yes, we can, and that's why it was important to put this one behind us.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
State Representative Ken Wolf from Burnsville, who is the chair of the House Regulated Industries Committee. As you heard, agreement has now been reached on an energy bill that sets energy policy in the state of Minnesota. House Majority Leader Tim Pawlenty joins us now at the broadcast location. Representative Pawlenty, thanks for coming by today.
My pleasure, Gary. I wish it was under more positive and constructive circumstances.
I thought you were coming by to announce global agreement.
Well, just moments ago, I left the meeting with Senator Moe and Speaker Swigum and others. So we are reaching agreement, or at least getting very close to agreement on some of the tax and spend issues, actually a couple of the spending appropriation bills, but it really would just be two or three of them, and there's an outside chance we could at least get those done today.
So it's possible that by midnight tonight some of the major bills will be passed.
It is possible, but it still will be difficult given the short amount of time we have left, but we're going to give it a go.
Which ones are most likely to be able to get through the logjam?
If we move forward with this plan, it would probably be the environment and ag omnibus bill, and potentially also be the early childhood family education bill.
Representative Larry Pogemiller told us that this isn't just a problem within the tax bill as to who gets the how the property tax money is sort of portioned out to people, but it's also a question about overall spending, and the Senate still wants more spending for K-12 and higher education. Is that right?
Yeah, people should keep in mind that what we're working off as a platform right now is a proposal that's been laid on the table. It hasn't been finally accepted in its current form by anybody. And so while we're working off a common platform, and there may be some pieces that we can agree on now, this whole package is yet to be finalized. And so there's a ways to go, and it'd be premature for anybody to say, we're on the verge of an agreement, because there's 3, 4, 5 pieces that are floating around that need to be resolved yet.
Governor Ventura, way off base, he has been pretty scathing in his criticism of legislators the last week or so.
Well, Governor Ventura needs to be a little careful about his criticism, because we want to be respectful, we want to work with him, but he also needs to understand that it's not the only job of a governor to come in here and give a State of the State address in January and deliver a budget message in February and then disappear for 3 months. That's an underutilization of the office of governor, and we all need to take responsibility for the mess that we're in right now. There's 3 parties at the table. It's the governor, the Senate, and the House. We'll certainly take our share of the responsibility, but I think he needs to be careful about how much finger-pointing he wants to do, because there's some of that could come back on him.
So again, bottom line here, possibility that some of the bills, maybe the less controversial ones, might pass yet today.
I think that's a fair summary, Gary, and the rest will be laid over or considered as part of a special session, and along with the omnibus tax bill, which is a key part of this as well.
And any word when that special session might occur?
Well, there's rumors flying around the place ranging from next week to the end of June and everything in between. I think the reality is nobody knows for sure, and it's going to be dependent upon what kind of progress gets made in the discussion over the next few days.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here.
House Majority Leader Tim Pawlenty joining us at our broadcast location. You'll recall, those of you who have followed our legislative coverage here on Minnesota Public Radio, that one of the very first headline items at the start of the legislative session was that mano-a-mano business with the governor and university president Mark Udall. Big battle erupted over how much money the University of Minnesota and higher education in general should receive from the legislature. Higher education officials were very, very unhappy with the governor's proposal. Legislators generally supported higher amounts. The question is, how much? And joining us now at our broadcast location is State Senator Deanna Weiner, who is the chair of the Senate Higher Education Committee. Senator, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gary.
How is this going to play out now? The governor was, as I understand it, he was talking about $100 million in new money for the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The House wanted $181 million, and then the Senate was talking about $268 million. What will be the final figure, do you know?
Well, I wish I did know. We've been ready. I think our conference committee has met probably the earliest and the most often. Mm-hmm. We're all clear. We're all on board with all our language. We're just waiting for the money and the allocation. We're certainly disappointed that if we have to settle for a number that doesn't even cover inflation, and if it doesn't cover inflation, I think the question will be, what's going to sacrifice? You get what you pay for in higher ed. It's bottom line. And is it going to be quality that will suffer? Will it be access that will suffer? Or will it be affordability?
Mm-hmm. A lot of attention had been focused and has been focused on the university's academic health center, with people noting that at one time the university medical school was one of the world leaders. It slipped in its reputation. Will enough money end up in the coffers of the Academic Health Center to put the U of M's medical school back at the top of the list?
That is one piece of good news. Both the Republican House and the Democratic Senate are adamant about funding the Academic Health Center. And we've got at least a core that the university requested was $16 million, and that is in all negotiation talks. So I feel very confident that that will be funded. But that's only one part of higher ed, so I'm still sitting on pins and needles waiting to find out what students can expect.
Best case, can students expect a pretty significant tuition increase, even best case?
Well, let me tell you best case. If we get $145 million for both systems, excluding the Academic Health Center, we're looking at double-digit tuition at a minimum. Those are the numbers that have been presented to me. So if we want to have, again, the affordability factor into what we're used to in Minnesota, we have to have more dollars.
Gary mentioned the fight between the governor and Mark Udall, and the university put up a pretty big lobbying effort. Has that made a difference here?
I think it has. We had Steve Bosacker actually come to our conference committee and recognize a void at the table in their cabinet for higher ed. So when they put their budgets together, they really don't have a higher ed commissioner. We've never had one. They wanted to have the debate about, Bosacker did, what is the role or should be a role of a person to sit at the table when they're putting their budgets together. I took that as almost an olive branch that they recognize now that their numbers were not accurate on higher ed. And I maybe I'm reading into it, but I believe if they had a voice in that office for higher ed, at their table, that we would have seen and expected better.
Governor Ventura repeatedly during the legislative session has emphasized the need for accountability. He wants to make sure that whatever money is appropriated for the University of Minnesota or for MinSCU is being well spent. Is there anything in your bill that improves accountability?
We both the House and Senate have accountability measures, and we both have talked about if we want to withhold any dollars for these accountability measures. Let me make it real clear, though. I think both systems have been accountable. They've done the reallocations, but we need to have that proved to the citizens of Minnesota, which I think they're entitled to. So both of us are positioned with accountability language pending the dollars that we're going to have for the system. I also would like to remind you that this does not even cover, the governor's budget did not even cover inflation costs. We have health care costs of over $50 million at the U, for example. We've got salaries. If we're going to have a 3%, $160 million won't even cover both Minsky and the U's health care costs and inflationary increases for wages.
Long term, do we need to start thinking seriously about closing some campuses or moving to that more restrictive model where you charge higher tuition, maybe be a little tougher in terms of who gets into school, scale back the offerings at the colleges? Is that what the long-term future holds?
Gary, you've hit it right on the head. It is something will suffer. We can't have it all for the money that's on the table or what may be on the table. Either access will have to suffer, affordability, or quality. And we would hope that quality will not suffer, and then it will be up to what we want to charge or what kind of access we want to have available. Will it be a campus? Will it be programs? The Minsky's trustees and university regions will have to make that decision.
One other quick question here. There was talk about charging the school districts, the public school districts in Minnesota, if a student graduates from school, goes off to, say, the University of Minnesota, has to take some remedial classes. There was some talk that the U then would charge the public school district for the cost of those remedial education. Is that still in this bill?
It's in the bill. It's a pilot program. We want to have some assessment. We've got grad standards that are now going to be looming in the next, I believe next year's graduating class will be the first class coming through with grad standards. And I think the real question is, what is it we expect from our K-12 system? Are they to be college ready? And this pilot program will give us that opportunity and that look to find out, are they ready, and what kind of chargebacks are we going to impose?
Okay, thanks, Senator. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're just joining us. That was State Senator Deanna Weiner, who is the chair of the Senate's Higher Education Committee. If you're just joining us, this is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio, and today we're broadcasting live from the Rotunda, the Minnesota State Capitol. This is the last day of the Minnesota Legislature's 2001 regular session. But there will be a special session because most of the major work of this legislative session has not been completed and won't be completed by midnight tonight. Mike Mulcahy, Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, has joined me here at our broadcast location. And also joining us now is Secretary of State Mary Kiffmeyer. Good morning, Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Good morning there, Gary and Mike.
Morning. Now, again, when we started this legislative session, boy, everybody was all in an uproar. Got to make some changes in Minnesota's election system. We can't have Florida repeating. We can't have that here. Changes. What's actually going to happen?
Well, what's going to happen is a little difficult. I can say, because we're all in a time of uncertainty right now, what I can say, though, what has already happened, which is good news since I last talked to you, Gary, in regards to the House position, the Senate has accepted many of the reforms. Of course, that's not final. And matter of fact, really excited that the Senate has so far agreed to the $2 million of the election equipment grant accounts to local governments. So we're really encouraged by that. And hopefully we might see the whole set of reforms here come forward in the future. But of course, great deal of uncertainty, as we all know.
That $2 million for new voting machines, optical scan machines, it was only about 10% of what you actually requested. So how many voting machines will that buy? I mean, how many counties will still be operating with the paper ballots and other things?
Too many. Too many for our position in the future. For 2002, we have a gubernatorial election year. Again, at least four major parties, could be more. Under that scenario, you have your vote total spread out. We're apt to have a really close election. That's the kind of circumstances which caused the Florida situation, though could happen here in Minnesota. But at least, hopefully, makes us a step in the right direction. I think, though, that ideally, and you see this happening around the country in those few states such as Florida, Alaska, and there's some other ones now that are making steps to go to a uniform statewide system. And that $22 million, $23 million that it would take to get there, obviously $2 million is far short of that.
Mm-hmm. You have been pushing the idea of requiring voters to show a photo ID when they appear at the precinct to vote. Is that, the Senate has now signed on to that?
No, that's one of the pieces that has not been signed on to yet. But what's encouraging is that the recount, some of the military use, some other things, we're seeing movement in that direction. But again, those are offers, not finals, but it's encouraging. I think what's interesting, though, is the redistricting issues that seem to be somewhat of a sleeper and should be actually be more paid attention to, mm-hmm. and that our office is very much involved with. And concern that I have is the uncertainty, since there's no redistricting plan on its way to the governor's desk, mm-hmm. as well, that we not only throw into that the election equipment, now we have redistricting. Candidates don't know what districts they're going to run from. Citizens out there don't know who's even possible to be their candidate. If they're thinking of running, run from what, from where, what does it look like? And not only that, our office works so closely with all of the local governments, the county auditors, 87 counties, cities, and townships. We're in the process of conferences, helping them on doing local government redistricting. All of that is up in the air, and next year's an election. Big concern I have is just on that.
If they have a special session within a matter of days here to finish the budget stuff, do you think they can get redistricting done by then, or do you expect another special session maybe in the fall? Or
I think one of the casualties of the way this has ended up in the last month is I think they thought those things were going to be out of the way a little bit sooner, and they could pay more attention to redistricting. They mm-hmm. haven't been able to do that. I don't think that even in the next few days, if they can just do the budget stuff, I think they'll be in a good shape. And probably, I would hope that another special might be able to be called to just deal with redistricting. And that way you avoid being caught up in all the other issues and make it just the issue, the clean and pure, simple issue, maybe this summer, even that they could do that. I think once you get these other things out of the way, their attention should be focused to that as the next urgent matter of attention. I hope so.
Thanks for coming by today.
Well, you're welcome. Always glad to be here. Thanks.
Secretary of State Mary Kiffmeyer joining us here at our broadcast location on this last day of the Minnesota legislative session. Mike Mulcahy, you've seen a lot of last days here at the Capitol. How does this one compare?
Well, it's I feel a little like the XFL, Gary. We're here. We've got we've got our headsets. We're all ready, and there's not much of a game going on. The best they're going to do, we've heard, is pass some of the least controversial spending bills. That's the best they might do by midnight.
Mm-hmm.
They probably passed that energy bill, and then it's just a matter of finding some kind of consensus on this tax and spend big picture. And as we heard Tim Pawlenty say, they're not there yet. They haven't signed off on anything yet. And Larry Pogemiller is bringing in other major spending issues into it. So it sounds to me like they have a long way to go here.
But they don't. It doesn't seem like anybody is. Well, there's not that acrimony sometimes here.
Well, I think that may be replaced by a desire to get something going here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how much that is really a factor in these negotiations to start with. They are coming from different philosophical points of view. But I don't think it's a personal thing that they have.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have a full hour's worth of coverage coming up here over the noon hour today. We're going to stay here right after our news. Governor Jesse Ventura will be joining us, and we'll be talking with the governor to get his slant on these latest developments. And we'll also be talking with Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. We'll take a look at the K-12 education budget. We hope to get some inside dope on the Health and Human Services bill, one of the bigger and more contentious issues. So lots more to come. And quickly, Mike Mulcahy, do you think citizens really care when they get done here?
Well, I don't know if they do. I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference if this goes on another week or two. But if it starts getting close to that July 1st date when government actually would shut down on July mm-hmm. 1st, that could make a big difference.
You're listening to Midday. Today, coming to you live from the Minnesota State Capitol on this last day of the 2001 legislative session. There will be more, of course. A special session will be called to deal with all the unfinished business. And as we noted, there's going to be more here on Midday as well, right after the break, for the Writer's Almanac and news headlines. Governor Jesse Ventura, among others, joining us over the noon hour today.
On Mondays, All Things Considered, after 20 years of behind-the-scenes studio recording, local jazz pianist Herb Pilhopper is back in Twin Cities clubs and out with a new stripped-down CD that takes him back to his jazz roots.
No splicing, no overdubbing, no tricks, no treats, just plain old recording of an event.
I'm Lorna Benson. We'll have that conversation plus the latest on the legislature on Mondays, All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
The Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 21st of May, 2001. It's the birthday of comic writer Al Franken, born in New York City, 1951, raised in Minneapolis. A writer, performer for many years on Saturday Night Live, on which he played the character Stuart Smalley, a therapist with a talk show on a public access cable station. It's the birthday of poet Robert Creeley in Arlington, Massachusetts, 1926. It's the birthday of the novelist Harold Robbins, born in New York City, 1916, author of The Carpetbaggers and other best-selling works. It's the birthday of ethnologist Francis Densmore, born in Red Wing, Minnesota, 1867, who devoted 60 years of her life traveling from village to village, recording the songs of Sioux Indians. It's the birthday of the first English poet to make his living from writing, Alexander Pope, born in London, 1688. He was known as the chief poet of his day for his masterpiece, The Rape of the Lock, 1714. He was 30 years old when he wrote it. He later came out with translations of the Iliad and the Odyssey that sold so well they supported him for the rest of his life. And it's the birthday of Dante Alighieri, born in Florence, 1265, to a wealthy banker. First saw his lifelong love, Beatrice or Beatrice Portinari, when they were both 9 years old. They met about 9 years later. Beatrice married another man. Dante married another woman. But his feelings for Beatrice, who died when he was 25, intensified, and he recounted his passion in La Vita Nuova, The New Life. He was a political exile from Florence when he wrote his masterpiece, The Divine Comedy, between 1310 and 14. And shortly after he completed the third section, Paradiso, he died at the age of 55 of malaria. Here's a poem for today by Theodore Rethke, Song for the Squeeze Box. It wasn't Ernest, it wasn't Scott, the boys I knew when I went to pot. They didn't boast, they didn't snivel, but stepped right up and swung at the devil. And after exchanging a punch or two, they all sat down like me and you and began to drink up the money. It wasn't the colony, it wasn't the stork, it wasn't the joints in New York, New York, but me and a girlfriend learned a lot in E-course Toledo and Wyandotte about getting rid of our money. It was jump in the hedge, it was wait in the hall, it was, would you believe it, father's tall. Turned out she hadn't a father at all, but how she could burn up the money. A place I surely did like to go was the underbelly of Cicero, and East St. Louis and Monongahela had the red-hot spots where you feel a lot like losing some money. Oh, the Cinco Septet played for us then, and even the boys turned out to be men as we sat there drinking that bathtub gin and loosened up with our money. It was Samoots Matuna and Bugs Moran. It was Fade Me Another and Stick Out Your Can. It was Place and Show and Also Ran, for you never won with that money. Oh, it wasn't a crime, it wasn't a sin, and nobody slipped me a Mickey Finn. For whenever I could, I dealt them all in on that chunk of Grandpa's money. It was Dead Man's Corner, it was Kelly's Stable. It was Stand on Your Feet as Long as You're Able. But many a man rolled under the table when he tried to drink up the money. To some it may seem a sad thing to relate the dough I spent on Chippewa Kate, for she finally left town on the Bay City freight when she thought I'd run out of money. The doctors, the lawyers, the cops are all paid, so I've got to get me a rich, ugly old maid who isn't unwilling, who isn't afraid to help me eat up her money. Song for the Squeeze Box, from The Collected Poems of Theodore Rethke, published by Anchor, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.